You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting for WFHB. This is Joe Crawford. In today's episode of the Daily Local News, we'll hear reports about local culture and commerce. We have one story about a family of Hoosier auctioneers and another about a local drag queen who finds inspiration from family members. And we have a report about the changes happening in the local grocery market and how the local food cooperative is faring. These stories are all the products of an audio storytelling class at the Indiana University Media School in partnership with WFHB. Then, later, we'll hear about vouchers available at local farmers markets on a new edition of our weekly community resources segment, Everyday People. In our first story today, reporter Brianna Susnak looks into how local residents are buying food and how companies are competing for our money. Susnak also brings us the story of how Blooming Foods is trying to change as much larger companies edge into their market.
The east side of Bloomington is really loud these days. Developers are building new housing, restaurants, in a 365 by Whole Foods market, which is expected to open its doors in the fall. Unlike other Whole Foods locations, the 365 market will have a simpler, more convenient layout. Alex Crowley is the director of the Economic and Sustainable Development Department for the city of Bloomington, and he oversees the planning of projects like the new Whole Foods store.
Well, you know, Whole Foods is part of a bigger trend, and the bigger trend is really a movement to healthier food, right? Which that trend is a very good thing. That, I think, helps the population. More options in that regard is great. You know, the unfortunate fact is that Blooming Foods, that was in part the stimulant for a lot of that new growth and in healthier food choices, is the one that is suffering as a result of it. They are almost suffering from their own success.
In the world of food, Lucky's and Whole Foods are a sign of the trend that is hurting Blooming Foods. However, the real competition is Kroger. After all, many of us already shop regularly at a local supermarket. So when you're at Kroger for your regular shopping and the organic food selection is not only robust but way cheaper, why make an extra trip to anywhere else?
So I was frankly a little bit surprised to see Whole Foods coming here because they, you know, they are competing against not just two other competitors, but really many other competitors in the form of the more traditional supermarkets.
After 44 years in business, Blooming Foods is ready to change. Paul Reed is the day-to-day operations manager there. He started at Blooming Foods 5 years ago as a cook and worked his way into a leadership role.
I think we're past the point of considering further expansion in brick and mortar scenarios. We are not expecting growth in revenue specific to our existing brick and mortar locations. But the way that we see our future and the future of Blooming Foods is more into online and delivery, virtual shelving, and other methods, food trucks, warehousing.
5 years ago, traditional supermarkets didn't care about organic food. However, that's quickly changing. Now Walmart, Amazon, and even CVS are doing it too, forcing co-ops across the country to close their doors.
I think if, in my position, if you weren't worried about it or felt like those were a threat, then your head's buried deep, deep in the sand. So there's a war out there in grocery and natural food grocery, and you cannot, as a co-op, no matter how successful you are in doing cooperative principle ideas, there's just not the cash and capital that Kroger has, or you know, any of the other big Hy-Vee, you know, in the more west and northern areas. They just have so much cash and buying power that you can't compete on price. So it's always about what can we do that's not price to separate ourselves and differentiate ourselves.
Alex Crowley says Blooming Foods does have one major advantage, though.
What they do have that I think is going to be harder for some of these other players to have successfully implemented are the local relationships, particularly with local farms, with local producers of their product, so products that are developed in Bloomington. Those types of local relationships are much harder for a Kroger and Whole Foods to fully cultivate.
Step out to any Blooming Foods location and you can see it for yourself. On Saturday mornings, bikers and walkers on the Beeline Trail stop for a break on the patio of the West Side's location. Families, visitors, and even dogs all make themselves at home.
I just like the environment a lot better, too. It's not like you go and you just kind of are picking out food. It's like, it's all like a whole little experience, because you buy your groceries, you can get a salad, and then, I don't know, you can maybe look at the little candles and the little soaps, and it's just a completely different experience, and I think it's made me a lot healthier.
Many co-ops have cooperative principles which lend towards giving back to the community and offering education on sustainable living and food.
It's a place where local entrepreneurs and businesses, producers, and farmers can have a place to sell their product outside of a farmer's market.
It's a community feel you just don't get in the parking lot of Kroger. However, many wonder if it will last.
That was reporter Brianna Susnak, a student during the spring semester in an audio storytelling class at the IU Media School. Up next, we go north to Indianapolis. While they've adapted to changes in technology and family dynamics, for the past 60 years, Earl's Auction has remained on the same street corner in the state capital. Paige Cato brings us this story.
Inside the big red and tan pole barn, hundreds of items from furniture to cars and even taxidermy line the walls. This is known as Earl's Auction, home to one of the largest and oldest auctions in Indiana.
My name's Ed Hurt, and I've been coming to Earl's Auction since I was 8 years old. It's about 45 years. I buy antiques, glassware, pottery, coins, toys, a little bit of everything.
Before I started the schoolhouse, I was a bread man. I delivered bread. Finally, one day, after years I'd been on a bread route, something just came over me. I'd like to get into something that was my own. Always went with my daddy. He'd go to sales, and I always, "Daddy, can I go to the sale with you?" And he'd say yes.
Earl Sr. and his late wife, June, were busy managing their business along with starting a family. Their two kids, Tammy and Earl Jr., were involved with the auction early on.
My dad had a truck custom built with a sleeper, and we went with our family. We were a family of four that went around to, auctions from Ohio to Kentucky to Tennessee to all over Indiana.
Eventually, Earl Sr.'s kids started to take on more roles within the business. Earl Jr. eventually bought his father out and took over with his wife, Lisa.
My dad built a good foundation for our family business, so it was quite easy. The big thing was to convince people that I could do the same job as my dad could.
Sr. stayed on the payroll and helped his son ease into the role as owner.
I just felt he's going to take over my footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, he has done that.
To keep up with demand, Junior realized the old school was not going to work. They sold the front portion of their corner lot and started construction on a bigger warehouse in 2000.
I was there standing out in the yard. and these big old building demolishers come in with those big cranes. And I remember when that crane hit that building the first time, it was hard.
He had kind of mixed emotions. It was nice having a brand new building, five times the size of our old building, and, you know, paved parking, which we had gravel, and, you know, just a nice clean building. But you could tell that there were a lot of memories where it was an old schoolhouse, and then he added on this part, and then he added on this part. And so, yeah, it was hard for him. But it was nice for us because our building is designed to move stuff in and out.
Earl's Auction. Fast forward 17 years, and the new future is sitting behind the counter. The granddaughter of Earl Sr. has taken over the office operations.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, just growing up, I helped so much, and I always kind of figured at some point, I've had other jobs, and I always end up still helping on the side, so I always knew I was going to work here.
Erica recently became a mother and likes that her daughter will get to grow up coming to the auction like she did.
It was fun. I mean, people always seem to know us, and I got to go and experience a lot of things that a lot of kids don't get to experience, you know, going to auctions and going on calls with my dad.
Over the years, the auction has not only adapted by building a bigger place, they have a buyer's premium, which is a percentage added on to the sale price of an item, so they can charge lower percentages to the seller.
We fought that buyer's premium for, probably close to 20 years. And what happened, the reason why we started doing it on our big commercial auctions, auctioneers were taking the auctions at basically 0%. And so we had to go to it, so we decided to go to it at all of our auctions.
Earl's is known for high-end auctions.
Tell me about one of your favorite auctions that you've ever done.
Probably the recent one, Nancy Ursay, because it was a challenge.
Earl sold everything from Colts memorabilia to Rolex watches and even her 6-carat diamond ring. This auction will join the other newspaper clippings framed along the walls in the auction house, like the House of Blue Lights auction where the most people in attendance at a one-day auction occurred.
What's your favorite auction that you ever did? Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, you know, that's kind of hard to say because I had so many outstanding where I had thousands of people that came to my sale.
The business landscape may be evolving at Earl's, but Senior sees no signs of slowing.
So, you know, young kids come up to me after they get out of auction school. Mr. Cornwell, what can you tell me to do? I said, the auction world is wide open. It's wide open. It's up to you. It's hard to do now, but at $2 and $3. That's $3 bid and $4. And $4 bid and $5. At $2.25, bid and $2.50. At $2.25,
$2.50.
That was reporter Paige Cato, who produced that story through an IU journalism class in partnership with WFHB. In today's show, we're highlighting stories of local culture and commerce produced through that audio storytelling class. Back in Bloomington, the Backdoor Nightclub is a prime location for some of Bloomington's most popular drag queens, for instance, Argenta Perrone. But for underage drag queens, like 20-year-old IU student Chase Duncan, performing at the back door is not an option yet. So instead, Chase performs in drag for his friends and at campus venues. He's crafted his drag persona from his family's stories and experiences, but most of his family has no idea about those performances. This story was produced by WFHB correspondent Sheila Raghavendran.
Okay, don't panic, Sheila, don't panic.
Hey, I'm Sheila, and I didn't panic. Oh, Rick!
But Chase Duncan, that's the guy who was just talking.
Oh, that burns like the devil.
He kind of did.
Okay, so what just happened was I got glue in the corner of my eye, in my tear duct, and it hurts. So now I'm crying.
Chase and I talked in his bathroom while he glued on his eyelashes. I watched as he reshaped his nose and put on purple lip color. He made a fierce drag queen.
You know, I've sung at some places in drag and that kind of stuff. But now I get to have, like, an actual, like, drag show. Like, this is, like, kind of like my debut. So it's, like, really exciting.
The drag show was at Wilkie Auditorium in late February. There were rows of black chairs under the fluorescent cafeteria room lighting. But the focus wasn't on any of that. It was on the queens.
Where's Merle at? Go get Merle!
My drag name right now is Merle Shining.
Merle! 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 Merle!
Drag names change, honestly. Like, it kind of comes and goes until you're stuck with one for, like, the rest of eternity.
Hey, Merle, what song you singing?
Merle is actually my grandfather's name. One day, I got these, like, calls from my mother. And she was like, I got a phone call from your grandpa saying that he got a phone call from you talking about how you were arrested and you were in prison in Illinois because you had your license revoked earlier for a DUI, but then you got in an accident that wasn't your fault. It was like this huge, just elaborate story. And I was like, what? And what was going on was, like, somebody was trying to scam my grandpa. But the person who was pretending to be me was like, Grandpa, can you send me this money? Don't tell Mom. Don't tell Mom. And so so when he called my mom, he was like, do you know where, I don't know, do you know, like, has Chase gone anywhere? Like, is he, like, at school or something? And she's like, he should be. Why? And he goes, well, I mean, I don't know if I can tell you. And, like, from there, I was like, okay, so if I get arrested, I can call Grandpa Merle, and he'll bail me out without telling my parents. So it's kind of to pay homage to him. Because I was like, who else could I trust like that? Like, who else has got my back like that? No one.
What does your grandpa think of your drag name?
None of my family really knows that I do drag. I don't think that he would necessarily, like, have a problem with it. Honestly, he's just, like, kind of old enough where he would probably be like, I don't get it. I showed my mom a picture of me in drag once, and she gave me this look like, what's going on here? And I was like, ooh, she's not reacting well to this. We'll just kind of push this off to a later date. I don't think she's, like, appalled that I do drag. I think she's just kind of like, you know, with having a gay child, she's probably scared, like, oh my gosh, what if my kid is, like, also, like, transgendered? Like, what kind of problems are they going to face? I know my mother well enough that I know that she means it out of love. But it's just something like, what my parents don't know won't hurt me. But my sister and I have a very good relationship, and I'm really happy that she's very supportive about it.
I honestly don't think he ever really came out and, like, told me he did drag. I think I just, like, saw it on his Snapchat or Instagram one day, and I don't think he was, like, embarrassed or anything to tell me. I think I was more just like, how did you do this? Like, how come you're better at makeup than I am?
We have this sort of mutual, just like sibling bond that I think we do know that we rely on each other for a lot of things that we don't feel comfortable telling our parents.
Give it up for Merle!
Do you wish that your parents were more supportive?
I mean, of course. I mean, like, that's like a really, really easy thing to say. Like, yeah, sure, of course I wish they were more supportive, but it's, you know, like, my father is a baby boomer, so he comes from a very, very different time. He's been learning a lot from me. He's told me that he's learned how to be a bit more of an accepting person and that kind of stuff. People are afraid of change sometimes. but it's inevitable. Really, I kind of march to my own drum. I've kind of quit caring what people think about me. It's not worth my time, you know?
So why do you do drag?
There's a lot of reasons I do drag. It's my medium. This is kind of my way to have myself artistically represented. I mean, I'm focusing obviously on like school stuff too, but there's still something more that I want from life. And I think it's drag. And it's been filling that void in my heart pretty well. So here we are.
That story was produced by WFHB reporter and IU student Sheila Raghavendran. The three stories featured so far in today's edition of the Daily Local News were all produced through a partnership between WFHB and an audio storytelling class at IU taught by instructor Amy Gastelum. Over the next couple months, we'll continue to highlight the work of these student reporters. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com. Up next, our weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hi, today we have Amy O'Brien, the Nutrition Outreach Coordinator with Area 10. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Today we're going to talk about the vouchers?
Yes, today I wanted to talk about farmers market vouchers. One of the things that we work on in the Nutrition Department at Area 10 is trying to get as much fresh, nutritious food to our seniors as possible. And one of the ways that we do that is through the Farmers Market Voucher Program. Farmers Market Vouchers are for people 60 or older that make $1,800 a month or less. And what they receive, if they qualify, is four $5 checks that are specifically to be spent at a farmer's market on produce. They can only get one packet, each individual can only get one packet per season. So they need to plan out how they're gonna wanna spend those over the season. So what they do is they take the checks to the farmer's market, sign it just like they were writing a check to the vendor at the time that they're making their purchase. The only important thing to keep in mind in this is that they cannot get change. So ideally, you want to get a $6 item and pay the extra dollar rather mm-hmm. than get a $4 item and lose your dollar.
Sure. That
so that's sense. Something to keep in mind when using them.
And where can you use these at?
You can use them at the Bloomington Farmers Market, the Owen County's Farmers Market, and the Lawrence County Farmers Market.
Oh, great. And how does someone get on the program? So say somebody wants to go to the Farmers Market and they call you, then what?
Absolutely. They just need to do an application form and they get the checks at the time that they do their application. And we have them available at our office at the Enright Center in Ellettsville. That's 631 Edgewood Drive. Mm-hmm. And then I'll also have them at the Bloomington Farmers Market on July 1st and the Owen County Farmers Market on July 8th. So people can actually get them from me at the Farmers Market on those dates.
Oh, so great. The next two Saturdays.
Yeah,
if people want to show up. Can people do this over the phone? Suppose they don't have access to... Okay.
You cannot do it over the phone. What you can do if transportation is difficult for you and you have someone that's willing to help you out, you can bring that person with you when you fill out your application, and at the time of application, assign them as your proxy, and they will actually be able to take those to the farmer's market for you and do your shopping for you that way.
That's nice. That's so great. Yeah, because, you know, some people may not be able to actually make it there quite so easily.
Absolutely.
So that's a great option. Do you see a lot of people taking advantage of this?
This is an incredibly popular program. Good. We never know exactly when we're going to get our checks each year, and we start getting calls usually in May. Mm-hmm. With people eager to find out when they're going to be arriving. And we receive a fairly limited number of them. We only have enough this year for 320 people. So, and we're going to be dispersing those in Monroe, Owen, and Lawrence. So it is something that if you're interested on, you know, you'll want to move on it pretty quickly to take advantage of it.
So say I go and I qualify and I have these vouchers. Is that the only time this summer I get the vouchers? Is it a reoccurring? How does that work?
It is just once per year.
Okay.
Yes.
So no winter market, just the summer market.
Correct.
Okay. Do all vendors accept the vouchers? Okay. Mm-hmm. So no issue there. As long as they have produce, they can go.
Yes.
And, okay.
The farmers market vouchers is really the first way that they hear about our services. And if you qualify for these vouchers, you also qualify for our food pantry. I mean, they've got the same requirements. So that you're really looking at the same pools of people. Mm-hmm. And so both programs turn out to be a really good way to...
It's like an access
point of contact.
To get nutrition, proper nutrition and well-rounded nutrition.
Absolutely.
So it's nice that older adults who are in need of this have the opportunity to get the things that we all think are a treat in the summer at the farmer's market.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's feature reports were produced by Brianna Susnak, Paige Cato, and Sheila Raghavendran. Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Midwestern prisons, coming up next on WFHB. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.